This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
You have year-end goals. Constant Contact has what it takes to help you meet them faster. Sell more, raise more, and build real relationships with your audience with Constant Contact's digital marketing tools. Put the go in all your 2024 goals with email, social, SMS, and customized marketing campaigns built for you in just a few clicks. Now through December 4th, get 40% off any Constant Contact marketing plan for 3 months. Ready, set, go to ConstantContact.com and get started today.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a closer look at stories from our radio newsrooms across the nation. Today on Deadline is looking at what President-elect Donald Trump's proposed policies for the economy and immigration, two areas where he's expected to make the most sweeping changes, could mean for the United States. Experts say that Trump won the election largely thanks to optimism he inspired among a majority of voters about how he'll handle the economy in particular. One of the main Trump policies that's garnering attention from economists is his promise to implement widespread tariffs. Now, let's get granular with that. Tariffs are taxes imposed by one country on goods imported from another country. Trump's proposal would set tariffs as high as 60% against all goods coming from China, and around 20% on everything imported from everywhere else. According to the president-elect, this will drive up domestic production and create lower prices for consumers with high tariffs. To get a sense of how this works, let's look at an example from September. That's when Trump said that, as president, he would punish machinery manufacturer John Deere for its plans to move some production to Mexico by taxing anything Deere tried to export back to the U.S. at 200%. So the underpinning of his philosophy is that if it's too expensive to bring it here, companies will choose to make it here, and that will create more manufacturing jobs inside of the United States. That sounds good, right? Well, many economists will tell you it's not that simple. In fact, according to an August study by the Peterson Institute for International Economics, these tariff proposals from Trump could cost middle-income households more than $2,600 a year. Scott Linsicum, the vice president of general economics and trade at the libertarian-leaning Cato Institute, told News Nation that tariffs would create a, quote, substantial increase in the price of almost everything we buy every day. So should Americans be bracing for a rocky economic forecast? University of Minnesota professor of economics Badasa Tadasa joined Odyssey last week to share more on what consumers can expect.
So what does this mean? And if let's say, we'll take something simple, not that this is simple, but 60% tax tariff on Chinese products, how does that affect Adam and Jordana and Professor Tadasa?
Well, tariffs are taxes on imported goods. So higher tariffs would definitely increase costs of products that are sourced from the countries that are subject to these tariffs. That means you, me, and anyone else buying these goods that are imported or sourced from other countries would pay higher than what we are paying right now. So you can expect that you would be paying more.
So for people who say, okay, like they look at Chinese products and think, okay, they're lower quality, that's why they're so cheap, we should buy American, would that help American goods? Would more people then turn to American goods? And secondly, are those goods that we need already produced here, and would they be available here?
Well, two things. We buy based on prices that are affordable to us. So those of us who value the quality of American products obviously buy American products. But when quality and tests are comparable with, and hence higher tariffs on imported goods means obviously switching back to goods that are already highly priced. That's one. The other thing that we should always remember is that when tariffs are imposed on goods that from others, it may also raise domestic prices because these days we companies are producing, obtaining their parts from different countries. And in that sense, part of what is produced here may be subject to some tariffs that are imposed on parts that are imported from other countries. Yes, some American goods may find more demand or market, but obviously American consumers would definitely be buying, paying higher prices.
So what's the benefit? What's the ultimate goal for American consumers? Because I don't imagine that President-elect Trump wants to damage American consumers. Is the ultimate goal to manufacture all of these products in the U.S. and then lower the prices? And how long would that take?
First and foremost, tariff rates have been so low in the U.S., as low as less than 1% until very recently. Raising tariffs would definitely make things expensive. And I don't think the president is bad enough to understand that, nor do I think that he has advisors who would say, go ahead and do this. But generally, taxes are simply to bring, tariffs are implemented to bring people or trading partners into negotiation. If they might be able to do that and extract some other benefit that they want to, that's a way. But implementing these measures and putting them into practice definitely has no benefit to the consumer. It may have some benefit to domestic producers. Domestic producers who are not able to compete with foreign producers. And hence, one way or the other, when we impose tariffs, the other countries are likely to retaliate as well. Retaliation means they would impose higher tariffs, and then it would affect our exporters and our domestic. So no benefit from engaging in a trade war or through tariffs at all.
Another pillar of Trump's plan includes mass deportations, which is another thing that experts say has more layers than are immediately visible. Sure, on the surface, it seems that fewer people seeking the same number of jobs equals more jobs for everybody, right? Well, at the beginning of this year, Ramya Vijaya, an associate professor of economics at Richard Stockton College of New Jersey, published a paper in the journal The National Interest explaining how Trump's agenda would impact the economy. The key argument that Vijaya makes is that the U.S. labor market is facing a shortage of workers, and that need will only increase as the U.S.-born population gets older overall. In the U.S., immigrant workers and business owners generated $4.6 trillion in economic output in 2022 alone. Immigrants make up 37% of construction workers, 47% of maids, and 27% of janitors. That's according to a study by the Immigration Research Initiative. That study summed it up simply with this. When immigrants come to the U.S., the economy grows. That doesn't mean fewer jobs. It means more jobs. Bill Hing, the founding director of the Immigration and Deportation Defense Clinic at the University of San Francisco, shared more on how immigration and deportation may impact our economy.
So how do these staffing agencies contribute to the exploitation of undocumented migrant workers in industries like warehousing and logistics? What exactly is going on behind the scenes?
Well, it's a dirty little secret that probably a lot of your listeners could guess is occurring, because there's such a great need for low-wage workers around the country in every type of industry. They turn to agencies, to recruiting agencies for these kinds of employees. And what the agencies do is they go to neighborhoods, they go to other places of employment, they go to where they believe that there are workers that need work, and they recruit. And it's been happening for decades, to be honest with you. It's just because of the recent election that the whole issue of undocumented immigration has risen back to the surface.
How do immigration policies that focus on border enforcement inadvertently support a labor market that exploits undocumented workers in low-wage industries?
Yeah, that's a really great question. What happens when the border gets closed, people surreptitiously find places to enter, and listeners should understand, it's dangerous. Many people die. There's, on average, one person a day dies trying to cross the border. But when those people, because the border is so difficult to cross, when those folks do cross, they are greeted with open arms, to be honest with you, with these recruiters. They go to major cities in California and across the country, and recruiters know where to find them, and they're desperate. And so the border enforcement has helped to contribute to that desperation.
How might large-scale deportation efforts impact the availability of labor in industries like warehousing and manufacturing, which rely heavily on undocumented workers?
Those industries are going to really be hurting for workers if President Trump follows through on his promise of massive deportation, because those industries are vital to all of us, to the services that we and products that we depend on, and there's going to be a shortage of workers for those companies to be able to deliver. So whether or not President Trump can actually follow through logistically on that massive deportation promise is a different question, but if he manages to do that, the economy is going to take a big hit.
Could the threat of mass deportations prompt these companies and staffing agencies to consider their reliance on reconsider their reliance on undocumented labor? And if so, what alternatives might they explore?
There are not many alternatives. That's the thing. We need a system that accommodates the flow of temporary seasonal workers, and we don't have that system. It's very small, just a few thousand each year that's accommodated for. And so what I think these recruiting companies are going to do is that they're going to tell the companies that rely on them, we don't have the staffing, and the hope is that the bigger companies will then put pressure on Congress to do something to reform the immigration system, to either grant legal status to those low-wage, low-skill workers who are here already, or to broaden the system for seasonal workers.
And if you can answer this in just about 10 seconds, if the labor pool is diminished, will the price of goods and services go up for the American consumer?
Absolutely. There will be fewer workers to provide the services, and it's going to be harder to get deliveries. It's going to be harder to get the actual product.
Forecasts might give some insight into what we can expect over the next 4 years. But a recent study has found that Americans are struggling right now. And many exit polls have revealed that Trump won essentially because people were looking for a change, one that betters their personal circumstances. According to a recent survey from the payroll tech firm JustWorks, 47% of Gen Z adults are relying on their parents or other family members for financial assistance. Another survey from USA Today found that 65% of Gen Z and 74% of millennials said that they were falling further behind financially. Personal finance expert Bill Dendy joined Odyssey to shed more light on the growing trend of struggling young Americans.
I want you to think back to when you were young. Did you struggle financially at times? Most of us did.
Oh, yeah.
We were in radio. Of course we did. But when the money was drying up, what did you do about it? A new survey finds that nearly half, 47% of all Gen Z adults, and that's between the ages of 18 and 27, rely on financial assistance from their parents or other family members on occasion. Question is, if you're a parents. What do you do when that phone rings? Do you make that transfer or do you practice some tough love? Well, let's bring in a personal finance expert, Bill Dendy, to discuss right now. Bill, good morning.
Good morning. And you're exactly right. It turns out that more, as far as a percentage for the ages, are still taking from their parents than in previous generations. And I can understand 19, 20, 21, but we're talking people 26, 27, 28, 29 years old still having their rent payments, their car payments, their insurance payments, their phone, something still covered by mom and dad. And as you say, it's almost 50% of them are still taking from mom and dad at that point. And I don't know if it's partly this generation is just slower to adult. They didn't want to drive their cars as soon as previous generations. They are taking longer to get out of school. They're taking longer to get married. They're taking longer to have children, which all that may not be negative, but the negative may be for the parents who tend to continue to pay out for longer periods of time and oftentimes jeopardizing their own financial security.
Yeah, that's an interesting point you made about they're waiting longer to do certain things, like with the driver's, you mentioned that, the driver's license. I mean, when we turned 16,
I was the first one at the DMV signing up. I want that test.
We were down there on day one, and my daughter's is like, man, I'll get it when I get it. But beyond that, is it tougher for young adults to get by financially now compared to, say, 20 or 30 years ago?
In so many ways, it is tougher, but we are in a strong job market, and they are finding jobs, but they tend to want more than what young people coming out of college wanted 20 and 30 years ago. They want to start off in the nice condos or the houses. They want some right. of the amenities. They live a better lifestyle. They don't eat as much ramen, perhaps, as previous generation. And
still
again,
eat it.
Also, we have the abundance. I mean, you want to take care of your daughter, my son who's 22. That's one of the blessings of having money is being able to help your family out when they need it. The only problem is we might be creating some bad habits that actually long-term hinder financial growth of this individual.
So how do you say no if you're a parent? That's the toughest thing to do.
Well, I think the first thing to do is to understand what kind of a need are they asking for. You can certainly see the benefit of helping out with a college degree plan if we're a little shy in the last year, a plan that's going to lead to employment. But if we're continuing to pay a ongoing bill without a deadline of when they're going to be self-sufficient, that may be a time to examine the needs and the wants and to see if they may be living beyond what their needs can afford right now. And that may be that tough conversation, because I've seen so many people just about the time they get the kids up on their own, and it may take to 30 or 40 years of age for these kids are on their own, then their own parents start needing help. And so you just get the kids launched, and now mom and dad have some sort of catastrophe because of Alzheimer's or needing some nursing home care that's not covered by Medicare, and suddenly they feel compelled to take care of mom and dad, leaving themselves woefully shy when it comes to their own retirement and the choices they have later in life.
When President-elect Trump's term kicks off in January, many are expecting that he'll at least attempt to quickly enact the sweeping changes he's promised. Whether you think his decisions are correct or not will probably depend on your political leanings. But here at On Deadline, we like to bring it back to the things we have in common. That's to say that, broadly, we all want families in the United States to have enough food to eat. We want our streets to be safe, our communities to be healthy, and our schools and students to be thriving. Regardless of race or country or birth, we all do better when we unite for policies that grow jobs and wages. That's what the Immigration Research Initiative and Economic Policy Institute wrote in a recent report. We couldn't have said it better ourselves. This show is produced by Joe Heedy, Christy Strouser, and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.